Welcome to the podcast, Claim Your Excellent Life, with your host, Suzanne Kellner-Zink, where she helps professional women learn how to be happy. Suzanne will teach you how to do this through building high self-esteem, relaxation and calm, and good, healthy relationships. Tune in every week as Suzanne shares effective strategies to help you claim your excellent life with happiness techniques, self-esteem building exercises, relationship tips, and relaxation information. Make sure to head over to dawningvisions.com to subscribe to the newsletter to receive your keys to happiness, as well as other useful free gifts for you.
In this episode of Claim Your Excellent Life, we are going to be speaking about being a youth means messing up. And interestingly enough, I have a youth right now. Her name is Mackenzie. She's 19 years old. So, just so that you're aware, we're just going to be really truthful and honest and just speak the way it comes out, because this is the way kids speak. Honestly and true, you may or may not like it. Truth is, this is the way they talk to one another. This is their world, so let us honor their world. So, Mackenzie, this is a very important subject to you for a variety of different reasons. Can you just tell our audience why this is so important that parents understand that youth means messing up?
Well, I come from a very successful family. I count my blessings constantly. But being as that I'm from a very successful and perfectionistic family, they never really allowed me to mess up as a kid. They would much rather do things for me and make sure I always had, you know, felt successful. And in that, I feel I was kind of given a kind of crutch that was suddenly taken out from under me after I left for college. And it's that, one, messing up was terrible. When I did mess up, it was absolutely awful.
What did you do that was your mess up, quote unquote?
Okay, the first really big one, I'm going to say this is mostly academic that I'm talking about, because my mom's an academic. Both my parents went to college. It's not really an option for me not to go to college in their eyes.
Your mom has a degree in economics, right?
Yes.
Very hard. All right, go ahead.
I believe the first time I really, really failed at doing my homework. This was all homework. We'd constantly fight. And eventually, I would sit down and do it. I don't even remember most of the lessons that the homework taught me, to be honest. That's beside the point. I remember in first grade, I had to do this thing every night where we'd take home a little booklet and we'd have to read it to a few adults.
When you'd read it to the adults, what was expected of you?
If we could read it coherently in under 2 minutes, we would be given a signature on the front of the book that, I think it was two, because every kid was expected to, you know, have two parents, or at least two people that could read in their life.
So it was to make sure that they had done the homework, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Once I actually did it, I can't remember if I forgot or if I just failed in general. I did not get the required signatures. I think I got one. And then shirked on the other.
And what happened as a result of that?
I got in, and honestly, it's not that big of a deal that you mess up and then...
You got into what?
I had to sit out during recess.
Oh, so they made you stay in and do some assignment or something?
No, you couldn't stay in and do the assignment. You'd have to sit on the so-called bench. Really, it was just a wall that surrounded the playground. Just a retaining wall.
So you're just supposed to sit there and do nothing?
Well, you'd be given, like, a clipboard and a pencil and a random assignment from, you know, the teacher's, you know, math book or whatever.
And then you had to sit there and do it.
Yes. You didn't get extra credit or anything.
Well, no, you were making up for what you didn't do, right? It was supposed to be a penalty, right? And how old were you at the time?
I was in first grade. Well, because I'd never really had the chance to mess up before, my parents held me to relatively high standards. I was a kindergartner, practically.
And the standards were?
I could not fail on my homework. I didn't know why, but I don't think I even knew what college was. It seemed so far off.
So they were talking about college already when you were, what, in, like, first grade?
Yeah, they talked about how they'd been to college. I didn't really imagine that I was going to get that far even then. I don't know why, but I never did.
You never did, huh? That's very interesting to me.
I guess I was, I don't know, preoccupied with snails or something.
Yeah, you like snails, don't you?
Oh, man, I love them. They're so cute.
So you went away to college, right? And what happened at college? And you were like, you were far away. You went 3,000 miles away. You went to the East Coast.
Yeah, I met some great people. But I think in middle school, I learned that I could fail. I learned that failing, you could detach yourself if you failed.
Detach yourself how?
Actually, I realize now I'd call in sick a lot. So that I wouldn't be, you know, have to, you know, fail face-to-face with the teacher or anything.
And how were you able to call in sick all the time?
I made myself sick a lot.
So you actually legitimately made yourself so ill that your mom decided that you needed to stay home?
Well, I got really good at faking it. I've always been pretty damn good, but I think that was at the point where I started, you know, watching, like, really dramatic, like, anime and stuff. So I probably was doing, like, an impression of some wounded Naruto character or something.
And your mother just sort of did what she thought was the right thing, was to take care of you at home.
Yes.
And in so doing, what happened as a result, what do you think was the end result now, looking back on it for you now?
They never told my mother that I hadn't done the work, because technically I'd been away.
You never told your mother that you didn't do the work because technically you had been away, and you're talking about at college.
This is during middle and high school.
Oh, during middle and high school. So where were you away, technically?
When I was away at college, sorry, I jump around from topic to topic. When I was at college, I just didn't have to deal with my parents anymore.
And that allowed you to do what?
Because college, you're even further away from the teacher. Then I could not do my work with even less repercussions immediately.
So, immediately, that's the magic word, yeah. Right? Because what happened?
Because it would rack up. I hated doing work. I still kind of do.
Is it any work, or is it just like homework, like academic stuff?
I don't know. It can be any work. I'm tired constantly. I think I'd be better off if I'd just gotten that chance to, you know, mess up when I could have just had the repercussions of messing up as a little kid without actually having real repercussions. Once you're an adult, there's things like the law.
Mm-hmm.
And there's things like school, there's things like taxes, and at that point, you can't really afford to mess up as often as you do when you're a kid.
Because you're now the age of maturity.
Yes, and people expect you to be mature. Messing up is part of growing up. It's part of becoming mature. And
so do you feel like you're still kind of like growing up in a sense, because you're still kind of messing up and you still don't know exactly the expectations?
Well, I know that adults will mess up.
That's good, because they do. I know I have.
Yeah, yeah. Adults mess up, but you hear about it when they do.
Right.
God, you hear about it all the time. But you don't talk about little kids messing up. It's like little Bobby ate dirt thinking it was a pie on the playground. Oh, no, you know.
It's not a big deal, in other words.
Not a big deal. Not at all.
Now, the other thing that you talk about, too, is, like, pressure. You feel like kids are, like, so pressured today. Can you talk about that?
Yeah.
Because it is different today than it was when I was a kid.
It's probably due to suddenly the importance of college. I feel like in the last 60 or more, 60, 70, maybe 50 years, there's been a sudden increase in the importance of college. And it's been increasing.
By whom?
I think it might be because we were not at war.
Mm-hmm.
Where suddenly we didn't, and I think this is how we, partly because we started outsourcing jobs, we managed to make it so that we could focus more on education, and therefore a lot more kids, well, kids in general weren't going away every spring to harvest crops.
That's true.
And also kids weren't, you know, going to war. So we started holding kids to higher educational standards because suddenly it became the norm for every single kid to get an education.
And do you feel like the parents that you know, because you live in a fairly well-to-do area. Manhattan Beach is a very, very well-to-do
mm-hmm.
area. And the beach, we call this the beach cities, right? Down
mm-hmm.
here, south of LA. And do you feel like, in talking to your friends and even in your own self, parents' expectations are a little bit blown out of proportion to what might be fair for certain kids?
Well, yeah. Education itself is hard. But then a lot of parents will expect their kids to take on tasks above school.
Like what? Know?
Like, say, gymnastics or violin, singing, dancing, acting, musical theater. And some kids can legitimately enjoy talking and doing these things. They can, you know, they're doing what they love. I've seen several kids, and I absolutely adore them, where they take the time to balance their lives out and do that. But then there's other kids who are signed up for a thing where it's like, you're going to be so good at this, and all the colleges will just love you, because you can do extracurriculars. And then suddenly, you have to do that on top of school, and chances are, since you're a kid, you're not really going to be all that interested, because when you're a kid, you're still a kid, you know?
And kids are interested in what?
Kids are interested in cartoons, in goofing off, hanging out with other kids, and honestly, when you balance their entire life, I get that you don't want them to go out and, you know, do drugs or anything, but then you also prevent them from being kids, in the sense that they can't go out and mess up.
And also interacting with kids in a more organic, creative way, maybe, perhaps. Like, we used
mm-hmm.
to play together a lot outside in the backyard, and we'd all get together and have these, like, major games that we'd play together, like 6, 7, 8 kids at a time, like Spud and Capture the Flag and those kinds of things in our big backyards,
mm-hmm.
because I grew up in a nice area in New York. And I don't see kids doing any of that stuff today. I see the skateboarders all over the place, but other than that, I don't see a whole lot. And surfers.
Yeah, kids don't go out on their own very often. Times have changed.
Talk about that.
My mom talks about her going out onto, you know, the sidewalk unsupervised, her and her sister, as kids, young kids, running around, going over to other kids' houses, uninvited.
Where did she live?
She lived in Costa Mesa.
Okay, so it's in another nice area in Southern California.
Yeah, a pretty darn good area.
Okay.
But then I think anxiety has gone through the roof with parents.
Because?
Because of, I guess, several kidnappings have occurred over the years. There have been all sorts of gross, horrible things that have happened.
Well, we certainly hear a lot of garbage stuff on the news that certainly makes it sound like it's a really big, huge thing.
Yeah.
With maybe, do you think these things might have been going on all along, but it just wasn't really reported so much because people didn't know about it?
Oh, yeah. I think it's, society has changed because war has suddenly not been interesting. Before, war was considered a really, really good thing. You know, we're the hero and stuff.
Right, get behind your nation.
Yeah.
Right. And your boys, right. And now,
in the shadow of Vietnam, I think it's changed so that any war, any death is bad. And I agree, any war or death is bad. But then, and I'm not saying necessarily it's a bad thing that they're reporting on all sorts of, you know, deaths and stuff, but it's also caused anxiety to skyrocket, because suddenly all these things are happening very close to home.
Right.
And it seems like times have suddenly changed because of that, you know.
And even living in a really wealthy area, parents still feel like totally their kids are at risk.
Well, yeah, there were kids in, I think, Manhattan Beach that have been abducted in the past 20 years.
Is this because their parents had a lot of money and they were going out on ransoms, or do we know why these kids were abducted?
They were several young girls, and the man who abducted them kept them chained up in his basement. You can imagine why he would do that.
So he was mentally ill.
Well, he was sadistic and creepy and horrible. But maybe, I don't know if people do terrible things because of mental illness sometimes, but sometimes it's just because they're terrible people.
Just terrible people. Thank you for that, making that discernment, because a lot of people do think that mental health problems equal horrible people, and you're absolutely right. Mental health people generally are more problematic for themselves than anybody else, correct?
Yes. Oh, being a mentally ill person myself, I think it's, I put myself through a lot more than what I try to put other people through.
Can you talk about, or would you be willing to talk a little bit about how you feel about that label of the mental illness, what the mental illness is that you're dealing with?
Well, a lot of people, when you say mental illness, there's this stigma attached to it where they think of, you know, the Joker from Batman.
Yep.
Or, you know, the comic madman villain, Frankenstein, you know, the scientist Frankenstein, not the actual Frankenstein monster. Or they'll think of, you know, Forrest Gump. And both of those things are pretty broad and really, really unproportional terms for the mentally ill. Because a lot of the time, mentally ill people would often go about their lives not knowing that they had any mental illness, and just thought, you know, others just thought it was a personality fluke, or that they were lazy, or just mopey, sad.
Telling you to get over it, right?
Yeah.
Just get over it. It's going to go away, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't work that way, does it?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
And we're talking here about depression in particular,
yes.
About not being motivated, not being able to do things, no energy.
Anxiety as well.
And anxiety, the problem that anxiety plays in your life
is
like what?
It stacks with depression, and it makes it, depression makes it hard to start on things, and anxiety makes it hard to continue, because suddenly you're judging yourself way too hard. And then if anyone says anything that could be reinterpreted as, you know, negative criticism, it gets harder and harder to do work. It really does.
Especially if you were never allowed to fail.
Yes.
Which makes it even worse.
Yes.
In terms of your own sense of who you are and what you're about and what you can become.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
So what are you finding is helpful for you in terms of turning some of this stuff around so that you can open up your life a bit, knowing that you're a kid and knowing that kids are going to screw up? You know, it's just the nature of the beast. That's how they learn.
Well, it's important that kids learn from their own actions, because you can read your kid as many storybooks as you want regarding, you know, things that other kids have done and messed up, and kids will understand it. Chances are they will understand, but they need to do it themselves. I'm not saying, like, let your kid run off a cliff, but
glad to hear that.
I'm saying that some kids should be just allowed to go out and run around and mess with other kids when the stakes aren't very high. And I feel like by expecting adult-type reasoning out of your child, you're essentially making the stakes higher for all of them.
Because
you're putting adult circumstances on things that don't really need that.
They don't apply to kids.
Yeah. When you're a kid. You need to be a kid, you know? It will feel like, you know, an adult situation when you're a kid. But then when you're actually an adult, you'll look back and say, you know what, that wasn't so bad.
So can you say now for yourself, whatever happened in the past was in the past. And it didn't feel so good back then. But what I do understand now is that I can do something different if I make a different choice for myself now in the present. For my future. Based on what I want. Meaning you.
I mean, I have things that I really want to do in life.
Like what? What would you like to do?
Well, graphic novels. I'm interested in those. I do like science, biology, fish keeping, snail keeping, obviously.
Yes, she does. She has a tank bubbling behind us right now, and she showed me her snails.
Yes.
Big snails.
Yeah, I have 17 snails now. They're really cute. Yeah, I'd like to work with stuff like that.
So, and you have contacts so that you can actually do stuff like that?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So you know that you have a way to get there if you choose to do that, right?
Yes.
And how good does that feel for you? Just knowing that, because, you know, someone else may not have those contacts.
It feels good, but it also puts a lot of pressure because suddenly I'm worried about burning bridges and whatnot, which is...
But why would you be worried about burning bridges?
I never really got to go out and really learn because I was always so afraid of failing.
Ah, so the whole point of this whole podcast is about being okay with failing because that's part of life.
Yes. Yes. I feel like that's what I've been trying to say.
So would you be okay allowing yourself to fail and fail forward and allow yourself to learn what you need to learn so that you can do what actually works for you in this life?
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you're ever going to get there, honey. I know I've done a lot of failing.
Yes.
Lots and lots and lots and lots. Still yeah. Doing it.
I mean, I've failed a lot.
But you're still here.
I'm still here, yes. I haven't failed that badly.
And your parents are still loving and supportive of you. And you have a brother you adore.
Yeah.
Right? So things could be a lot worse than there. You're in a pretty good place, right?
Yeah.
You just need a little bit more privacy and a little bit more ability to sort of find yourself, I would say.
Yeah.
With self-motivation to make that happen, right?
And also there's the fact that... suddenly, kids grow up very fast.
Oh, they grow up very fast. Talk about that, please. Why do you think that's happening?
I think that's because of, you know, suddenly the, I think it was first grade when suddenly not every kid was watching cartoons. Suddenly there were some kids that had moved straight from Dora the Explorer to, Drake and Josh? No, Drake and Josh was later. I think Lizzie McGuire, Sweet Life on Deck, Tosh.0, all of these kind of adult type situations with relationships and whatnot. And I feel like it made kids feel that these things were very important without really knowing what they were just yet.
And what kinds of things were they discussing in these?
Crushes, obviously, were one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Romance and whatnot.
And how old are these kids when they're looking at this stuff?
The 6-7-year-olds.
So 6 and 7-year-old kids are watching stuff about romance and crushes, and they have no idea about what any of this stuff is, because generally 6 and 7-year-olds don't even like the opposite sex, or if they do, they're just like friends, buddies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
And I think they also learned about... Well, romance is one of the things that these shows depicted as incredibly important. Like, they blew it way out of proportion, even to, like, adult standards. They made romance, you know, kind of this holy grail of, you know, everything in your being should culminate to being romantic and having a crush on someone and whatnot.
Are we talking about crushes, or are we talking about you need to fall in love in order to be happy and get married and have a happy life with your family and all that kind of stuff? How far did it go?
Well, they never really talked about marriage themselves, because... these were about kids that were supposed to be in high school. I realize now that a lot of the so-called high schoolers, high school and middle schoolers, were probably like 20-something-year-olds casted as
high school,
you know, fake reality shows about high school.
So it was really a distorted view for young kids.
Yes.
To get at that time.
Yes.
So you're getting into, like, interpersonal relationships that are way beyond any 6 or 7 or even 8 or 9-year-old kid's ability to comprehend, because they're not emotionally developed to that point yet. So it becomes confusing.
Also, popularity was another thing. The social hierarchy mm-hmm. that, I mean, I'm not saying that there is not a hierarchy that will develop among kids, but I think suddenly these shows that blow them out of proportion, for the sake of it being a show, they try to blow it out way out of proportion.
Which shows?
I'd say Hannah Montana, several of those high school things, High School Musical, I think, might have been one of them. I'm not sure. I was a cartoon addict. I watched Ed, Edd n Eddy all up through even middle school. I was still watching Ed, Edd n Eddy.
Why do you like those cartoons so much?
I've always been partial to animation, hence why I like the graphic novel side of things.
Is it like the artistry behind it that you appreciated always, or was it just that it wasn't into all this other stuff that made you grow up too quick?
Well, I liked the fantasy kind of aspect of it. I liked that cartoon characters could do just about anything. I enjoyed that.
So it was a whole different way of looking at life. It was quite the opposite of this so-called reality, fake reality thing, forcing mm-hmm. kids to grow up too quickly. Instead, yeah. It was a whole different alternative.
A lot of cartoons have unconventional stuff, like early 2000s cartoons were essentially still an extension of 90s cartoons.
Right.
This was a sudden revolution after 80s cartoons, which were very cookie-cutter characters so that they could make dolls and action figures. And they all looked the same. They were all, like, the 80s really popularized Barbie right. and, I think, Jem. And all of these characters were made with toys in mind, pretty much. He-Man, I think a lot of the men had the same, you know, very buff, muscular, with different hairs and bodysuits. I'm not going to go into the talk of anything regarding those shows because, one, I wasn't around for them, and two, honestly, I don't know the plot at all. And
but the point to bring it up is
that suddenly cartoons in the 90s flip-flopped, and suddenly they were very unusual. Ren and Stimpy, SpongeBob, Cow and Chicken, Nicktoons. I think Ed, Edd n Eddy was early 2000s.
What made them unusual, though?
The character designs were all kind of abnormal in mm-hmm. some way. It was important to make every character look different, and it still is in art. And by making every character look different, but not quite, you know, perfect
right.
in any way, it makes okay to suddenly realize that you're diverse and you might not ever fit with other kids, and that every single character can have all sorts of things going.
So that they can be originals.
Yeah.
And not have to fit in. So that would be a healthy turn of events, really.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. And yes. that's why you like the cartoons versus these reality TV things that are kind of crazy
yes.
making.
Got it. You don't care about Ben 10's, you know, high school deal, middle school. You want to see him travel around North America and beat up monsters.
it's a whole different thing. So let me ask you this. This whole thing about the stress and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any upside to any of this, or what is it that we need to do in order to help kids to cope better? Because it is really hurting a lot of them, not just the mental illness, eating disorders, drug addiction.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are going way, way up, not to mention, I mean, we're getting a lot of overdosing that's going on. Kids don't understand what their bodies can handle, and then these energy drinks that are doing horrible things to their hearts. What do you want us adults to understand so that we can help our kids?
I feel like you shouldn't expect your kids to understand things that are still way over their heads just yet.
So be age appropriate.
Yes. I'm not saying censor everything, but I'm saying allow kids to be kids. Kids are gross. They do gross things. They play in the mud. They love that. They're kinesthetic. They like tactile things, like handling bugs, you know, rolling in the dirt with dogs or something. Like, they love doing gross things. I did.
Mm-hmm.
I still kind of do.
What else?
Also, kids should be allowed to fail, and it shouldn't be as big of a deal, but they should be allowed to, you know, be accountable for their actions every so often, because that way it allows them to grow as people, and it shows them exactly what life is.
Because people aren't perfect and they never will be.
Yes. As an adult, it's not your job to cover up for your kid's flaws. It's your job to help your child accept those flaws and understand them. And it's your child's deal to work with those flaws.
Well, to work with the flaws and be able to compensate for the things they need to compensate for, right? And also understanding that sometimes those flaws are the things that make you you.
Yeah.
Which makes it interesting and different. I mean, like, you love snails and you love all this microbiological stuff, and you also like, you like cartoons, and you have like all these diverse interests of things that you really truly enjoy, and you're really intelligent about things to do with technology and stuff. So it's not like there's not enough interest there. It's about how parents kind of help the kids direct their energy is, I think, what you're talking about.
Yes. Because honestly, as a kid, you don't really know what anyone's talking about. Like, it's kind of like how adults always would say no to drugs. And us little three-year-olds are like, what are drugs? See, that's kind of, teaching abstinence is also one of them. That's kind of iffy. It's like, well, a lot of these kids are either don't know what sex is, don't know how to initiate sex to begin with. I think it should be, a lot of the time with sex, it's taught after the fact.
What age do you think would be a good age for kids to learn about sexuality?
I learned about the very, very basics of what sex was in fifth grade.
And did you think that was too early?
Honestly, I don't know, because I was very uncomfortable with the concept of sex through middle school.
Were they talking about your anatomy versus a guy's anatomy, or are they actually talking about sexuality in terms of what sex actually is?
This was my mother that taught me what sex was. I think I asked about some statue of a cow or something, and she told me. And I was like, oh. And in my mind, I'm like screaming.
And how old were you at the time that happened?
Fifth grade.
Okay, so you're 10 years old.
Yeah.
So it'd be more appropriate a little bit older.
Yeah, actually, a lot of kids already knew about what sex was. Some kids still didn't. And something is supposed to happen, I guess, between fifth and sixth grade where suddenly you know about it. So I think I learned it, though.
Well, girls get their menses usually around, well, when I was a kid, it was 12. Now it's more like, I don't know, 10, 11?
I think 11 when I got my...
So they want you to know about your body so that you can know what you need to do, right? It's important to know beforehand, not after the hand. It's a little too late then.
I'd been told about a menstrual cycle before. I don't think I truly understood what it meant. But
when it came, did you know what it was?
Yes.
And was that helpful?
Yes, but it was still awful, and it still is. I hate the menstrual cycle.
I don't know too many women who like their menstrual cycles, especially if you get cramps and PMS and all that other happy stuff that goes with it, you know? But that's all very, very interesting. So we're going to need to wrap this up.
Okay.
And I just cannot thank you enough for your honest input, understanding, your transparency about some of the things that you've been dealing with in your own life, in the different levels, because parents, these are your kids.
We're not perfect.
And stop making them pretend that they need to be, because you're not either. Not really. Think about it for a moment. And there's nothing wrong with that, because no perfect person would be able to get along with any other person, because no one's perfect.
And kids are not cookie-cutter copies of you. You can't live vicariously through them. Make your own life. They make their own life. You can make yours. And I think we should just focus on enjoying it and learning from what we do. I mean, we should learn to be more accepting.
Yes, let's accept people and their abilities for what they have and help them work through the stuff that they find to be a bit more challenging in ways that work for the folks with these challenges, so that they can find a way that works for them, because judging them or deciding that they're going to be like you, it's not going to work. It's going to fail 100% of the time. I can certainly promise you that. So, Mackenzie, with that thought, I'd love to thank you for your time. And again, your honesty, your transparency, and all the things that you've been dealing with. And I know you've been thinking about this for a really long time.
Thank you, Suzanne.
And maybe we'll do another podcast in the future about some other subject matter that would be of interest to you. Because these messages are so important. I'm going to be interviewing a couple of psychologists on the other side of things. I have one that works with, he's actually a specialist with autistic people. And I have another one who probably in April or May we're going to put on, who works with 2 and 3 year old kids and brings the parents and the moms in with her to do the work so that we can do interventions really early. So getting a viewpoint from all different areas of life, because this is life, folks. It happens all over the place in all different ways, and we need everyone's viewpoint so that we can come together and be happier, more fulfilled, and certainly more accepting of one another. Thank you for your time this time. Until next time.
Later.
If you have found the information that we have shared with you here on Claim Your Excellent Life to be helpful and interesting, please do us a favor of giving us a rating on iTunes. We hope it will be 5 stars, as well as a review. Doing both these acts will move the podcast up in the ratings on iTunes so more people will be able to find us. Also, please do us the favor of letting your friends and colleagues know about this podcast so they too can gain the knowledge that we're sharing here. We'd like as many people as possible to learn from what we have to give here. And we thank you for your time and effort in doing so.
Thank you for listening to the podcast, Claim Your Excellent Life, with your host, Suzanne Kellner-Zink, where she helps professional women learn how to be happy. Suzanne teaches you how to do this through building high self-esteem, relaxation and calm, and good, healthy relationships. Tune in every week as Suzanne shares effective strategies to help you claim your excellent life with happiness techniques, self-esteem building exercises, relationship tips, and relaxation information. Make sure to head over to dawningvisions.com to subscribe to the newsletter to receive your keys to happiness, as well as other useful free gifts for you.